हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौभुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सदि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
44. So, okay. Material nature in the living entity should be understood to be beginningless. Their transformation and the modes of matter are products of material nature. The bottom. Both material nature and the living entity are eternal. This is to say they existed before the creation. The material manifestation is from the energy of the Lord, right? So we're not getting into any other point. We're just saying they're there before the creation. They're eternal, but the point being made is they're there before the creation. The material manifestation is from the energy of the Supreme Lord. And so also are the living entities. But the living entities are of the superior energy. And so both are energies. For super soul is a expansion of the Lord. But the living entities and material nature are both energies of the Lord. But the jiva is superior energy, material energy is inferior energy. Both the living entities and the material nature existed before this cosmos was manifested. Material nature was absorbed in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mahavishnu. And when it was required, it was manifested by the agency of Mahatattva. Similarly, the living entities are also in him, and because they are conditioned, they are averse to serving the Supreme Lord. Thus they are not allowed to enter into the spiritual sky. But with the coming forth of material nature, these living entities are again given a chance to act in the material world and prepare themselves to enter into the spiritual world. That is the mystery of this material creation. Actually, the living entity is originally the spiritual part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. But due to his rebellious nature, he is conditioned with material nature. So, the mystery of the creation is that we are trying to... It is there so the living entity can prepare himself to go to the spiritual world. Right? It doesn't have another purpose. It's not here for the living entity just to enjoy. The idea is that it's here because by being in this situation, the living entity starts to get the idea that this is not actually where he belongs. Right? Because if he belonged here, why isn't it working? Why isn't he happy? Why isn't he satisfied? But he always has to keep changing situations. Because in the spiritual world, they don't keep changing the situations. Not Mother Yashoda is like, I mean, okay, I've been doing this for, you know, eternity. Can't someone else do this? You know, why is it every day breakfast? Why every day? When do I get a break here, you know? You know, it's not happening like that. Does that make sense? So she's not getting disturbed. But here we always have to change situations. It's always changing. Nature is said to be the cause of all material causes and effects, whereas the living entity is the cause of the various sufferings and enjoyments in this world. Right, so this is being quoted again. It was already quoted in the previous one. Living entity is born of spiritual nature, but has a tendency to enjoy nature. Right, and that in here it's also pointing out that nature is enjoyed by them. Right, so but before is that we're pointing out is that he's controlled by the nature, and he's controlled by the Lord. Material nature is controlled by the Lord, so they're both submissive. Here is bringing out the element of him being the enjoyer, right? But the point is it still doesn't quite work out for him. Why is the living entity in the material world, and how is the living entity a conditioned enjoyer? The different manifestations of body and senses among the living entities are due to material nature. There are 8,400,000 different species of life, and these varieties are creations of the material nature. They arise from the different sensual pleasures of the living entity, who thus desires to live in this body or that. But he is put into different bodies, or when he is put into different bodies, he enjoys different kinds of happiness and distress. His material happiness and distress due to his body, and not to himself as he is. In his original state, there is no doubt of enjoyment. Therefore, that is his real state. Because of the desire to lord it over material nature, he is in the material world. In the spiritual world, there is no such thing. So to be happy, to enjoy, then that's natural for the living entity. The difficulty is that enjoyment, he takes it as trying to enjoy separately. That's the difficulty. Right? So when he tries to enjoy separately, then he is brought to the material world. Right? So that is why he's in the material world. Right? Does that make sense? And he's a conditioned enjoyer because he has his desire, material energy arranges it, and he has to function within that. He doesn't have a choice to act outside of that. Does that make sense? Lesson 18. Godhead is the real enjoyer. Let's see, 18 is... Okay. Godhead is the real enjoyer, but the living entity is the conditional enjoyer of the modes of nature. 13:1-2. Arjuna said, O my dear Krishna, I wish to know about Prakriti, nature, Purusha, the enjoyer, and the field and the knower of the field, and of knowledge and the object of knowledge. The Supreme Personality Godhead said, this body, O son of Kunti, is called the field, and one who knows this body is called the knower of the field. Define the term Kshetra and Kshetra-gya. Arjuna was inquisitive about Prakriti, nature, Purusha, the enjoyer, Kshetra, the field, Kshetra-gya, its knower, and knowledge and the object of knowledge. When he inquired about all these, Krishna said that this body is called the field. The one who knows this body is called the knower of the field. Right? This is where we get the stand where he's saying the body is the field. Because the field is that is the situation in which the elements of that situation you can engage in some activity that will get a result, right? So that would be the field of action, right? So that's the body, right? Because the jiva can engage the body. So that's the field. And that body then naturally is within those environments, right? They're connected. The environment, because of the body, it's in a particular environment. So as we saw before, it starts from your mind, then the senses, then the body, and then that body, according to the karma, is also in different situations, right? So the focal point is the body, because that's what you're going to, that's your connection to the field. You're going to use the body like that. Does that make sense? Yes.
But we're also trying to control the mind, so in that sense it also starts there, right?
It does, but I'm just saying the field is because the mind wants something, so therefore then engages the senses, yeah, which means the body's engaged within that environment.
And in this context,
So the body then becomes the field, right? Because it's the body, because it's the senses, the sense objects like this. It's that whole interaction that's going on there, right? Because your perception is limited to the body.
Yes.
Right? We'll say, no, but I can see so many things. No, but you're seeing. The body is seeing.
Yes.
The body is hearing. The body is smelling. So it's the body that's the field, and then this is all that's perceived and all that. So it brings it back to the individual.
In reality, we're just seeing the light photons that are hitting the retina. So.
That's there. I mean, that's the mechanics of how that works, a particular, you know, technique or a particular recipe. But the point is it's the sense. You know, how it means that the sense works in that particular way, that's not actually the important element.
No.
That the sense, you know, that our connection with the world is only through the senses. When the senses are controlled by the mind, that's more important. Because then you can get your self-realization. But we busy ourselves with, you know, how does the eye see and stuff like that. You know, so it may have some use if they're trying to do some medical kind of thing or like that. But other than that, it won't bring about self-realization. Not that you couldn't. But it's just, it won't, because they're not looking at it from that viewpoint. Right? You know what I'm saying? So that's where the so-called knowledge is actually ignorance. Yeah. Is it's just, you know. You know, so like I have a garden here, and then, you know, so there's rocks here. So I take a rock and I study it, and I put it in different kinds of solutions, and I put the solution under microscopes, and I look at everything. Will I be able to understand why the rock is here with all these other rocks? No. But so therefore, it's ignorance. It's just studying the situation. But it's the dynamic of it, the relationships that are there, the reasons behind it, none of that will be perceived. You know, so matter is ignorance. Right? So that's all we're studying. So we have great volumes of knowledge and ignorance. Right, so that's where we work on the difference between the two, right? You know, how we're going to, you know, what it is. In other words, being inquisitive is very important, but knowing which aspect to be inquisitive into, you know what I'm saying? That's what gets important. So here is that, okay, what's the connection of the bot with this? You know, why is it there? It's because you desire, that's why it's there. We just think it just happens. You know, and then if it just happens and it's nice, we'll consider this is great. If it just happens and it's not nice, then it's, you know, where's my free will? You know, because my free will is I should always be happy. And it says that's natural, but you have to be in the spiritual world for that. Right? The body is the field of activity for the conditioned soul. The conditioned soul is entrapped in material existence and he attempts to lord it over material nature. Because also, you're in this situation. And we could also say, no, but the field is beyond the body. Right? You know, and we're just an element in the field. But the point is what does it matter if it's someone else's field? Right? It's what's your field. But the point is, if you're in a human body, then you can interact with this in one way. If you're a dog, it's another way. If you're a bird, it's something different. You understand? So it's the body that's the field. And these are just all the other, you know, aspects that are connected to it. And so according to his capacity to dominate material nature, he gets a field of activity. That field of activity is the body. Right? So how you can dominate, that's how you, what kind of body you get. So you do a little domination, then you get little body, right? An ant or something. You know, the lord of all he surveys, right? You can see about, you know, 1 inch, you know. So, yes, it's happening here, yes.
There's this story with Prabhupada when one cockroach has found its way into the ashram. And so he takes up the cockroach and opens a window and says, I give you the world, go and enjoy it, and throws it out of the window and closes the window.
Prabhupada said. Okay. Yeah. That's interesting. Okay, so it's through the body, because your interaction is only through the senses, which are dependent upon the body that they are housed in. Yes.
The place where Krishna spoke by Gita, Kurukshetra, is it related to that?
Kshetra just means place. like that. You know, so I mean, it means you can say, okay, it's the place of the Lord's pastimes and stuff like that. But in here, we'd have to see if Prabhupada ever uses. I'm not sure. It's mainly because it's Dharma Kshetra. It's a holy place. So then there's an anxiety that being holy, it will have a auspicious influence on the outcome. And Yudhishthir being dharmic, then he would be able to take advantage of the auspiciousness. And Duryodhana being adharmic, then it might not go so well for him. That was, you know, the only thing I remember was specifically about the element of Kshetra. Like that. But, you know. Yeah. But the point is, it's a place. But until bodies come there, nothing happens. So in actuality, the body is the field, you know, not the field that the body's in.
Yes, it's interesting because Krishna spoke to Gita and explained to Arjuna he knocked his bone in, so the name Kurukshetra is quite special.
Yeah.
Okay, Kshetra is the body. Kshetra Gya, then, as I said before, is the soul and the super soul. They're the knower, right? The soul is the small knower, and Krishna is the unlimited knower, because he knows all the bodies. Okay, then, still less than 8 points. Oskaina 13.3, excuse me. Oskaina Bharata, you should know that I am also the knower in all these bodies. And to understand this body and its knower is called knowledge. That is my opinion. Right? So here he's saying, because he's asked what is knowledge and the object of knowledge. So he's told about the nature, right? The enjoyer. Right, so you have the living entity as enjoyer, and the Supreme Lord is the supreme enjoyer. The field, the body, and the knower of the field means the living entity and the Supreme Lord. And knowledge is to be able to actually understand these things. That is my opinion. So this means how Krishna would look at it. Right? It means you could have so many other ways to look, but this is then defining, this is how Krishna looks at it. Who can attain to knowledge? While discussing the subject of the body and the knower of the body, the soul and the super soul, we shall find three different topics of study: the Lord, the living entity, and matter. In every field of activities, in every body, there are two souls, the individual soul and the super soul. Because the super soul is the plenary expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, Krishna says, I am also the knower, but I am not the individual knower of the body. I am the super knower. I am present in every body as the Paramatma, or super soul. One who studies the subject matter of the field of activity and the knower of the field very minutely in terms of the Bhagavad Gita can attain to knowledge. Right? So someone who is studying this, they can understand. You know, so he says here, very minutely. So you're getting into the fine details. Because otherwise, you know, it means the general, the principle is there, but to understand exactly how that principle applies. Because here, we'll take, you know, field. Because generally when you're looking at an activity, there's the environment, then there's ourselves and how we fit into that environment. But technically speaking, that environment means the body. You know, not ourselves. We're the knower. Because that environment is only perceived through the body, right? And you can only interact according to the body. So what you can do is according to your body. Does that make sense? The Lord says, I am the knower of the field of activities in every individual body. The individual may be the knower of his own body, but he is not in knowledge of other bodies. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is present as the super soul in all bodies, knows everything about all bodies. He knows all the different bodies of all the various species of life. A citizen may know everything about his patch of land, but the king knows not only his palace, but all the properties possessed by the individual citizens. Similarly, one may be the proprietor of the body individually, but the Supreme Lord is the proprietor of all bodies. The king is the original proprietor of the kingdom, and the citizen is the secondary proprietor. Similarly, the Supreme Lord is the supreme proprietor of all bodies. The body is called the kshetra, and within it dwells the owner of the body and the Supreme Lord, who knows both the body and the owner of the body. Therefore, he is called the knower of all fields. The distinction between the field of activities, the knower of activities, and the supreme knower of activities is described as follows. Perfect knowledge of the constitution of the body, the constitution of the individual soul, and the constitution of the supersoul is known in terms of Vedic literature as jnana, or knowledge. That is the opinion of Krishna. To understand both the soul and the supersoul as one yet distinct is knowledge. One who does not understand the field of activity and the knower of activity is not in perfect knowledge. One has to understand the position of property, nature, Purusha, the enjoyer of nature, and Ishwar, the knower who dominates or controls nature and the individual soul. One should not confuse the three in their different capacities. One should not confuse the painter, the painting, and the easel. This material world, which is the field of activities, is nature, and the enjoyer of nature is the living entity. And above them both is the supreme controller, the personality of Godhead. It is stated in the Vedic language in the Svetasvatara Upanishad 1.12, Bhokta Bhokyam Prareritam Cha Matva Sarvam Proktam Tri Vidham Brahman Etat. There are three Brahman conceptions. Prakriti is Brahman as the field of activities. And the jiva, individual soul, is also Brahman, and is trying to control material nature. And the control of both of them is also Brahman, but he is the factual controller. Right? So here, So Prakriti is, you know, it means the body, the field of activities, that's Brahman. This is made of Krishna's energy. Right? Inferior energy, but still. Then the living entity, who's trying to control that, right? Because we're trying to control the body. You know, sometimes it goes the way we want, sometimes it doesn't, right? And then there's the Supreme Lord, and he's the actual controller, right? No one else is actually controlling. Yes?
The citizen is a secondary proprietor, and the king is the original proprietor of the kingdom. So can we say that in all activity, Krishna is first, and we are always having the same nature, but in second? Like to own something, to enjoy something, to...
That's there. But here we have to know is that the Lord's enjoyment and ours are kind of different.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So it's you know, it's just like you have the parent and you have the child. They're in the same situation, but they're trying to enjoy it in different ways, you know?
Yes.
But the control is ultimately the parent. So the Lord, he is the enjoyer because he's interacting with his internal potency. But the jiva is trying to control nature for his own purpose, right? So that's why he enjoys and suffers. It never says that, you know, Krishna is the supreme enjoyer and the supreme sufferer, like that. And so that way, then he, you know, no, he's just the supreme enjoyer. Right? Everything goes, yes.
So, like light, suffering is the absence of joy.
Yeah, I mean, because that's what we're suffering. Because what we want. The problem, the pain that we have is not going away. Right? In other words, you're hungry, so that is called suffering. So when you eat, then that suffering goes away. We call that happiness. Mm-hmm. So when the suffering doesn't go away, then it's not called happiness. Mm-hmm. So that's all. It's not two different things. It's just removing the one, and then you get the other. That's why it's not actually positive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm just thinking, like, we can't really have a characteristic that Krishna doesn't have, or, I mean...
Yeah, but how we apply it, that's another thing. See, so you always have to look at the principle. We look at the detail. You know, does that make sense? Yeah. So I like to ride my motorcycle off of cliffs, and then pull the ripcord and then parachute down into the ravine, and then, you know, use my parachute as my, boat to go over the White Rapids and then come down to the end there. But the point is that Krishna, so all it is we're trying to enjoy nature. So Krishna also enjoys nature, but he doesn't choose to do
it
that
way. More expertly.
Yeah, you know, he would rather, you know, sit there in a nice grove and, you know, have nice discussions and eat nice things and like that. So that principle is there. The detail, that's the difference.
Maharaj, so something as joyous as the family picnic. So the family there going out to have a picnic at the beach or some nature spot like that, and they're removing the suffering of being in the town all the time, in the house.
Because, you know, when they get into the car, then they're excited. They get out there, they're excited. No, it's nice and it's great and this and that. And after, you know, they're there a while and they notice that, it means it's called a beach. In other words, it's the area where the landmass meets the ocean, like that. But when they notice that, you know, it's freezing cold and it's windy and, you know, there's all kinds of other people there and kids are yelling and screaming and, you know, stuff, you know, then it may loosen. But yes, it gets rid of being cooped up in the house all day. Yeah.
And practically it's time to go home when they realize that.
Yeah, but then they're happy to go home.
Yeah,
because now they save themselves from the problem of being at the beach, right? You know, now you can go back home where it's comfortable and start a fire and, you know, stuff like that, you know, seeing that you couldn't do it at the beach, and so you actually didn't eat, and so.
So, like, everything, every so-called happiness in the material world is...
It's just removing a pain.
Could you say...
You know, pain of just being always alone, so now you're with everybody, and then having been with everybody, then you remove the pain of that by going back and going into your room and closing the door, and, you know, like that, yeah.
Miracle of birth as well.
Miracle of birth, yeah, it means just everybody's happy that, you know, all the anxieties that went with it are over.
Finally over.
Yeah. See, the point is that birth is there, that's a miracle, you know, but that's all, everything else is, you know, that you digest lunch, that's a miracle, you know, that you can see is a miracle, that your nose works, you know, is a miracle, you know, unless... Yeah, unless your nose runs, then you have a problem.
So then, only activities and happiness and relationship with Krishna are real.
Yeah, that's real, because then it's the soul interacting with the Supreme Soul. Because then it's not removing a pain; it's just that positive interaction. But the other one, it's whatever it is, you're removing a pain. You know, you're bored, so then you go out and do something, so you're happy. You know what I'm saying? But as soon as that activity is there, then it becomes neutral. Mm-hmm. You know, you've removed the pain. Now what? Now you have to think of something else. Does that make sense? Yeah. That's how it...
Removing the pain is like the state of goodness?
Removing the pain, yeah, you could say. But the only problem is, because you go about it in the mode of passion or ignorance, then there's always a reaction for that. So that's why you're going about removal of the pain through knowledge. Right? So if you know the field, you know the living entity, the Supreme Lord, and the material energy, that's knowledge. Right, so that's sambandha jnana. When you know chit achit and ishwara, that's sambandha jnana. Now that achit takes on the form of the field, right? Chit is then the living entity who is, you know, trying to control the material energy for its enjoyment, mm-hmm. right? And then Ishwara is the Lord who's the controller of both. Yes. Right? When one knows that, then when one goes about one's activities, yes. right? Then you're acting in pure goodness. So that remains. It doesn't change because there's no passion or ignorance in it. You know, so that can remain. Because the other ones, because of passion and ignorance, it has to change. It won't remain. You know, so even though people are dealing in the present, their consciousness is, you know, in the future or past or controlled by passion and ignorance. So therefore there's all these varieties of, you know, happinesses and distresses come up. Lesson 19. Lesson 19. The real position of living entities is therefore that of the enjoyed by Godhead or the servitors of Godhead. 9.9. O Dhananjaya, all this work cannot bind me. I am ever detached from all these material activities, seated as though neutral. Yes, seated as though neutral, because he's not involved in what the living entities are getting involved in. But he's not neutral in that he's not trying to make arrangements for the living entity to reestablish his relationship with him. Right? What is the supreme neutrality of the Lord? He says, the Lord is always neutral in the material activities of the created world. His neutrality is mentioned here with the word udasinavat, reason. Although he has control over every minute detail of material activities, he is sitting as if neutral, right? Because he's only controlling the activities. You know, one is for the overall reformation of the living entity, but two is according to the desire of the living entity. Right? So it's udaharan. The example can be given of a high court judge sitting on his bench. By his order, so many things are happening. Someone is being hanged. Someone is being put into jail. Someone is awarded a huge amount of wealth. But still, he is neutral. He has nothing to do with all the gain and loss. Similarly, the Lord is always neutral, although he has his hand in every sphere of activity. Right? So it's because of him it's all happening, but it's not his desire. He's just, you know, adjudicating what's happening. Further, Upanaya, in the Vedanta Sutra 2.134 it is stated, Vaishamya nairgrihnye na. He is not situated in the dualities of this material world. He is transcendental to these dualities. Nor is he attached to the creation and annihilation of this material world. Footnote. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti writes in his commentary to Bhagavad Gita 9.9, but then, since you do so much activity, how is that you do not get bound like the jivas? This verse answers, activities like creation do not bind me. Bondage arises from attachment to action and not from the action itself. Right? That's very important. Right? That's been our discussions whenever we get, like yesterday we got into the person smoking the cigarette. No, it's the action itself that binds you. No, it's the attachment to the action. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like a pack of cigarettes is thrown into the fire. So that means that they're smoking. Yes. So does that mean now the fire is getting some reaction, you know. You understand? So it's not the activity. It's the attachment to the activity that causes the problem. So the living entity, he's performing an activity, he's attached to it for himself, he gets the reaction. Then he's attached to it doing the, so the results are for Krishna, then there is no material reaction. Right? One is not bound, one is freed. Does that make sense? Because all my desires are fulfilled spontaneously without having to act, I don't have attachment to action nor bondage. I am like an indifferent person who is not affected by the mixture of happiness and distress of quarreling parties. Right? Two parties are fighting over something, and, you know, it doesn't bother you because it has nothing to do with you. Right? So like that, as all these different things go on, but in this way, he's not attached, because whatever he desires is automatically fulfilled. Like for us, we desire it, then material nature has to transform and make all these arrangements, and then if we have the karma, then it removes that difficulty, where then we will call that happiness, but then that happiness is gone in a moment, and then we have to start this whole other process for something else. But the Lord is always satisfied, because whatever he desires, they're spontaneously happening. Right? It's a little different.
Yeah. A little bit.
Lesson 20. Forgetfulness of his real nature is the cause of his multi-variance.
Just your conclusion?
Oh, conclusion, yeah. The living entities take their different forms in the various species of life according to their past deeds, and the Lord doesn't interfere with them. They desire that, then he doesn't interfere. They get what they're looking for. Right? But, you know, it's according to what they deserve, like the judge. You know, you've done something wrong, then you will be adjudicated, and according to what you deserve, you'll get. Like you said, one man is sent to jail, one man is awarded a large sum of money. But it's according to, you know, your previous activities.
So the problem is we don't know exactly what it is we desire. We only see part of it. Like the reaction is the other part of what comes with our desire. Or is that...
Say again.
Okay, we desire something. The Lord gives it to us, but he gives it based on what we deserve.
Mm-hmm.
So does that mean that... that we don't know what the reactions are of our desires.
I mean, means we don't know before they happen, or you don't know after.
Most of the time, all of the time, we don't know before, and some of the time we don't know after.
Yeah, I mean, before is how will you know? Because we're not transforming nature.
No, but
it's not our potency.
But studying Shastra will give us a better idea.
Now, yes, we know that if this activity is performed, this is the result.
Mm.
You know.
And that's why studying Shastra takes us out?
No, studying Shastra is what takes us out is the non-attachment to the material endeavor. You know, and the material results.
Which comes...
from studying the Shastra. But it's these other study Shastra, and it doesn't help. So it's studying the Shastra in the association of devotees under the direction of the spiritual master.
And applying
that, and applying that with the proper attitude, then that's what gets you out. Yeah, so it still comes back to the desire.
Yeah.
So by studying, then you're associating with, you know, the proper perspective.
Yeah.
So then we start to align our thinking in that way. Is that? Lesson 20. Forgetfulness of his real nature is the cause of his multifarious troubles. This divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. So why is it difficult to overcome the influence of the material nature? The Supreme Personality of Godhead has innumerable energies, and all these energies are divine. Although the living entities are part of his energies and are therefore divine, due to contact with material energy, the original superior power is covered. Being thus covered by material energy, one cannot possibly overcome its influence. As previously stated, both the material and spiritual natures, being emanations from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are eternal. The living entities belong to the eternal superior nature of the Lord, but due to contamination by the inferior nature, matter, their illusion is also eternal. Right? So therefore we have the, okay, here. The conditioned soul is therefore called nityabadha, or eternally conditioned. No one can trace out the history of his becoming conditioned, right? So he says no one can trace out the history of becoming conditioned. That means he was conditioned. Not nityabadha means he was always conditioned. Because the point is, if he was always conditioned, then how would he switch to eternally liberated? Right? Because we're going to get sticky about, no, he says nitya means we always were, but nitya means eternal. So if you could stop it, that means then there was a start. You know what I'm saying? Because the material is temporary. That's the nature of it. Right? But transcendental, that's eternal. So it's not that you start it, you uncover its natural position. So the living entity was always spiritual. It's just he was, by his covering, by being conditioned, he's not acting according to his spiritual nature. Does that make sense? But being conditioned, that's a covering. So there was a time when it started, and there's a time when it ends. But how long that is, no one can trace. Therefore, the term nitya is there. Consequently, his release from the clutches of material nature is very difficult, even though that material nature is an inferior energy, because material energy is ultimately conducted by the supreme will, which the living entity cannot overcome. So he's been in it since time immemorial, so his practice is such that he's not, very easily willing to just let go of it. Right? And at the same time, even though it's inferior to him, it's still conducted by the Supreme Lord. And we can't know the Supreme Lord except through devotion. That means only by devotional service can we overcome the influence of the material energy. Otherwise, no one else can. Right, the karmis aren't trying to, they're just trying to get a better quality. The jnanis are trying to, but they never are successful. So since temporariness means nityabadha, so there's still nityabadhas. Right? They may be liberated nityabadhas, but they're still eternally bound. Does that make sense? Yes.
First canto in the second chapter, Prabhupada says in the purport that the love of the jiva for Krishna is manifested as affection for gross and subtle matter.
Mm-hmm.
So is there a difference between this affection and devotion?
See, it means, we'll say we're devoted, but we're not actually devoted, because why are we doing it?
To get something.
Yeah. So devotion means you're doing it to not get something. You want the other person's pleasure. Mm-hmm. So, but the expression of affection, that principle is the same. Right? The difficulty is the natural affection for the Lord we're expressing through the material energy. Right? It's still going to the Lord. Because what it is in material energy that we appreciate is still the Lord. But we think it's that material energy. Right? But because we think it's material energy, we get the reaction for expressing it to material energy. Right? So therefore it becomes transformed into lust. is that we want to get something for ourselves from it. So even though it's directed unknowingly at the Lord through material energy, but the purpose is for our own self. So now we direct our activities towards the Lord knowingly and not for getting something for ourselves. So then that lust turns back into the love. Make sense?
Yeah. And is it comparable? You know, how much affection you have for the gross and subtle matter decreases to that quantity?
If you're performing devotional service, then as it decreases for material energy, means it's increasing for Krishna. But the materialist may decrease it, you know, from the gross forms, but it doesn't mean that their idea to be the controller and enjoyer is decreasing. In fact, now instead of it being enjoying all those little bits of nature, then one thinks that he is God. You know, so that's kind of, it doesn't really change. So in factuality, if it's reducing, it's because of devotional service. Right? Because then knowledge and detachment are automatically byproducts.
It is the only solution.
It's the only solution, yeah. But what we're determined that no, we can. It's that plus this little other this and that. So as we decide that no, it's only this. So as we become fixed on that, then the focus is that, the desire is that. So the result is that. The reason that we say we're distracted is because we think other things are going to generate this happiness. Does that make sense? That's the problem. When we understand that there is no happiness here, you know, it's only the removal of pain, then one starts to think, okay, then engage oneself in the actual activities of happiness. Another meaning of guna is rope. It is to be understood that the conditioned soul is tightly tied by the ropes of illusion. A man bound by the hands and feet cannot free himself. He must be held by a person who is unbound. Because the bound cannot help the bound, the rescuer must be liberated. Therefore, only Lord Krishna, or his bona fide representative, the spiritual master, can release the conditioned soul. Without such superior help, one cannot be freed from the bondage of material nature. Devotional service, or Krishna consciousness, can help one gain such release. Krishna, being the Lord of the illusory energy, can order his insurmountable energy to release the conditioned soul. He orders this release out of his causeless mercy on the surrendered soul and out of his paternal affection for the living entity, who is originally a beloved son of the Lord. Therefore, surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord is the only means to get free from the clutches of the stringent material nature. Because he's in control of the nature. That's what he's mentioned before. That's why you can't get out of it. So when one surrenders to the Lord, then he can remove the our being, how you say, bound by the material nature. No? That makes sense. So it's only through devotional service.
You can get a strong experience of this when you're doing group distribution in hell/London. And, you know, Kristen can really like...
You left out the jolly old.
Jolly old girl.
It's so impossible that someone just needs
this. Yeah, no, it means anything when you're very absorbed in Krishna consciousness. You know, so it's kind of like book distribution is you don't really have an alternative. You know, that's the nice thing about it. You know, and you know, it's giving the this knowledge to others, so that's always very much appreciated. they're saying, so it's not because you're selling a book. It's because this knowledge is being distributed. In other words, those who distribute knowledge through the books, then they're still today doing that. Those who are selling books, then, you know, they last for, you know, 3-4 years, maybe a few more if they're really recognized. Something like that. Yeah, does that make sense? The word mam eva are also significant. Mam means unto Krishna, Vishnu only, and not Brahma or Shiva. Although Brahma and Shiva are greatly elevated and are almost on the level of Vishnu, it is not possible for such incarnations of Rajagun passion and Tamagun ignorance to release the conditioned soul from the clutches of Maya. In other words, both Brahma and Shiva are also under the influence of Maya. Only Vishnu is the master of Maya. Therefore, he alone can give release to the conditioned soul. Is that a sense?
Almost on the level of Vishnu?
Yeah, almost. But it means almost from our perspective.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Almost.
Yeah.
And then, not from Vishnu's perspective.
No, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Almost from our perspective.
They're all very far away from us.
Yeah.
Brahma and Shiva are like position. Brahma is like a position.
Brahma is a position. Shiva basically, it means, of course, it's a position, but it's the personality of Shiva, Tattva. So they're in their own categories, like that. It's a transformation of Vishnu Tattva, like yogurt is a transformation of milk. Milk can transform into yogurt, but yogurt can't go back into milk. So, like that. So Vishnu is still the Lord of Shiva. Like that. But occasionally you have a jiva that qualifies, so then he'll take that position. Not of Sadashiva, but of, you know, Shambhu within the material universe.
But this means this Shiva is under the influence of Maya. Means partially, or...
One understands the husband and wife relationship, and he's married to material energy,
yes.
Then
he's definitely under the influence.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, now Navriti. Now doubt may come. Here a doubt may arise. Is it possible for the forgetful soul to reestablish his relationship with Godhead? Or Vipaksha, objection. The Bhagavad Gita 6:19-20, the Lord states, those who are envious, mischievous, who are the lowest among men, I perpetually cast into the ocean of material existence, into various demoniac species of life. Obtaining repeated birth amongst the species of demoniac life, O son of Kunti, such persons can never approach me. Gradually they sink down to the most abominable type of existence, right? So the question is, so can the living entity, you know, reestablish his relationship, you know? But here then it's said that those who are envious and mischievous, then they'll be, you know, how you say, perpetually in these, you know, most abominable kind of existence. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so then that's the case. So does that mean I'll be born in London forever?
Yeah.
You know, like that, you know, so yeah, like that, so... So now, then, Prabhupada gives the reply. You know how because you understand because each one you end one adhikarana, it will give the thing will come up about a doubt that will bring it to the next one.
It's basically closing all the doors.
Yeah, yeah.
Trying to escape.
Yeah, yeah,
the,
yeah. Because we see here, there's this run of adhikaranas, mm-hmm. but each adhikarana is made up of adhikaranas that's going like that. So you're trying to establish all those.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so each one gives rise to the next. When you say the point, then it's well, how?
Mm.
You know, then you give your reason, no, but, you know, then it has, you know, so each one gives rise to the next. And when you finally conclude, okay, that's unclear, but then what about this next thing? You understand? So it just keeps the process going. So if it's in connection with Krishna, then that process is very nice. It clears all doubts. But if what's not in connection with Krishna, it just keeps you busy. Then you get around to the end, and then you come back to the beginning again. And then they don't see that sense of material nature functions on basic fundamental principles, that they don't understand that they themselves running around in those points in the circle are similar to the dog running around after its tail.
Yeah.
But they'll think, no, I'm so intelligent, the dog is so foolish. No, it's the same thing. Yes, the dog does it a little quicker, and then he lies down to take a nap, while they do it for many, many lifetimes and all that. And then, yeah. Adhikarana 4. Lessons 21 to 23. Godhead comes himself or sends his confidential servants to reclaim these forgetful living entities. The forgetful living entities can know Godhead only if he explains himself, or if he is explained by his confidential servants. Right, so means to get the living entity to get out means we saw it has to be by the Lord. The Lord is controlling material nature, so therefore, how do you say, he's controlling material nature, and so only he can release the material living entity from those clutches. But then how will that happen? Because he's very far away. Mm-hmm. Like that. So he comes himself, or he sends his representative. Right? So this is then it goes into the fourth Adhikarana. Okay. Lesson 21, Godhead descends himself or sends his confidential servants to reclaim these forgetful conditioned souls. 4, 7 through 8. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharata, and a prominent rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. So what marks one as irreligious, and what are the principles of religion? What is the highest principle of religion? Principles of religion are laid down in the Vedas, and any discrepancy in the matter of properly executing the rules of the Vedas makes one irreligious. Right? So it means when you're following the rules of the Vedas, that's religious, because it's defining the actual how things should work. Mm-hmm. And if one's not following that, one means it's irreligious, because it's against the nature. Mm-hmm. It's not following and not doing how it should be functioning. Right? Because we're looking at, oh, it's just a rule. You're following a rule and not a rule. No, the rule is there because that defines, that is in connection with the definition of the actual nature of the what you're dealing with. Does that make sense? So the difficulty comes up as going against the rules means then you're going against the nature.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense?
We must go against nature a lot.
We meaning?
Well,
representing which community?
Well, just technology isn't nature, is it?
I mean, it works according to a particular rule, so therefore it has its nature, but then how technology is used, that's another thing. Technology functions within the laws of nature, but then how you use that technology, then that's also the consideration. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, like that. So, therefore, it's you know, because there's always been technology. It's just generally avoided by those who are, you know, serious about, you know, self-realization and, you know, that kind of thing. Because the demons have, you know, always had, you know, technology. That's they're into it. Because they're into material nature. So any way they can manipulate material nature to get more out of it, then they're going to do it. Right? So your traditional followers of the Vedic culture, you know, it means the suras, they basically leave it alone and just take it in its more natural state. But the demons want more, so therefore they have technology.
So what about this concept of simple living? Am I thinking simple living?
But, yeah, of course. I was just saying, but the point is if the technology is there, if it's used in Krishna's service, then it works.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if you have a program, you're here in India and there's a festival, let's say you want to attend the Chiradoi Utsav in, Atlanta this summer, then you better leave now. You know, you could walk. I wouldn't, it'll be hard to get across the Himalaya, but you could walk from here, Bangladesh, on through, up around. Probably be easier to go. I'm not sure how you get past the part of the North Vietnam. You might be able to. But, you know, if you can get up, you want to get all the way up. Or maybe you could, or go around the other way. Yeah, it means it might be a little longer, but it might be easier to go up through there, go through the pass, go in through Russia, Kazakhstan, over. Then, because you know, then you miss the whole China and Mongolia and that.
So everything
like that.
Is Krishna's nature, even if it's man-made.
Oh, how does man-made means what? So is a you're sitting on a blanket that's man-made.
I can see that's made by.
You know, the brick is man-made.
Yeah,
you know.
You have to take it right back to get to Krishna.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Okay.
It's just a matter of how much it distances itself from the natural need of the human being. You know what I'm saying? Having nice food, that's, you know, a natural need, you know. Does that make sense? Having an iPhone, that's not necessary. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it depends who you talk to about it, you know. Like, would it be in the inherent nature of teenagers that they wouldn't be able to live without text messaging? It's like you breathe, you text message, you eat junk food, you know, like that. You know, so I'm saying it's all part of the inherent.
Maharaji says about that. Without properly executing the rules of the Vedas makes one a religious. Any discrepancy? So rice without ghee is irreligious?
Yes, so take your own ghee. And that way you don't have to complain about the management. Because it's irreligious for those not in a position, you know, of authority to complain about the authority.
He's walking around with his own ghee.
So that's what's under there.
Yeah, yeah. Ghee, honey, stuff like that.
Okay. So, see, he's prepared.
That's why I'm always close to him.
In other words, at lunch, you sit a little closer.
I'm just trying to see where he goes.
If it's offered to Krishna.
And you have the bucket, so therefore.
I have the bucket.
So you get the volume and he gets the quality.
Everything,
so then
works
if you work
nice.
Together, then it works quite good. Okay. Yeah, okay.
If it's offered to Krishna, is that taken care of? So the rice, even without ghee, you still get points?
Points.
See, it's probably they put ghee on Krishna's rice. You know, and then he eats all the rice that's there. It's just that they don't necessarily extend the manifestation of the ghee on the rice, that's all. Yeah. Okay. Because that rule is for the pujari, or for someone who's serving. For someone who's eating, then the rule is that you accept Krishna Prasad. What I'm saying. So since you're in the position of receiving, then that is one's duty. Right? So to stand up on the table and start waving your hands and yelling and screaming, that would be irreligious, because that's not the duty of someone sitting and honoring Prasad. Does that make sense? Yeah. So therefore it's very fine. We have to see the bigger picture. That's why the whole culture and everything is described, because we don't always see it. So that way, by following the rules, then we're following our part. But it's just following the rules doesn't make it perfect. It's that we're doing these things to please Krishna. That's what makes it perfect.
Yeah. Why is the ghee rice freezing?
I'm not sure what the connection is with these spirits that Godhead descends himself, so he's descended as the Prashad. So he's, in other words, he's going to descend into this rice, and so the perfect form of rice is rice with ghee on it. So then the perfect, you know, deity, the rice deity would be rice with ghee. So if you don't have the ghee, it's not as ideal.
Yeah.
But as we said, there's a good chance that on the Lord's place there was, right? So therefore, then, but he eats all of the rice, but then this is what you can offer to him and make the arrangements like that. So you either be happy with the rice that may not have the ghee on it, or get more friendly with the person doing the offering.
We're eating his remnants, so maybe he just took the ghee for himself.
Could, but I don't know that he would need to bother and go with that trouble. So it'd be a lot of trouble to lick each grain of rice and get all of the ghee off. So
you can probably.
Okay. In the Bhagavatam, it is stated that such principles are the laws of the Lord. Only the Lord can manufacture a system of religion, right? Only he can do it. It's complete. We make up our own, but it's bogus. You know, you have to, you know, once joining the club, you have to wear those pants, you know, until they fall off and stuff. You know, these are rules. That's their religion. But it doesn't mean that, it doesn't mean that it has any, it's not elevating. You know what I'm saying?
It's not the hell's angels.
You said it, not me. So it's not the Only the Lord can manufacture a system of religion. The Vedas are also accepted as originally spoken by the Lord himself to Brahma from within his heart. Therefore, the principles of Dharma or religion are the direct orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.3.19. Right, so it's making it very clear that the rules that are given, that is Krishna. So that's why they're not to be avoided, you know, or neglected. You know, it's not that, oh, we chant Hare Krishna, we're above the rules. But then if we say that, you know, meaning it, I don't need to follow any detail or anything like that, then that means you're transcendental to God. You know what I'm saying? So you've gone beyond God, so you have even a new philosophy. Because the Mayavadis, they say they just become God. But here you actually transcend God and go beyond God, you know, so like that. Some of the nouveau Mayavadis. Right? These principles are clearly indicated throughout the Bhagavad Gita. The purpose of the Vedas is to establish such principles under the order of the Supreme Lord, and the Lord directly orders at the end of the Gita that the highest principle of religion is to surrender unto him only and nothing more. Right? So all these other principles of religion are there to establish our surrendering to the Supreme Lord. You know what I'm saying? You know, so maintaining cleanliness is so that we stay pure, so then the consciousness, because we being conditioned, because the body is the field, that means that's where we perform activities, so we're affected by the field, because we identify with it. So if the field is clean, then there's a better chance that the mind and the consciousness will be clean, right? The Atma Shuddhi is there, right? The body. Then the Chitta Shuddhi, or the consciousness, will be there. Does that make sense? So it's just an assistant. That's why it's there. Does that make sense? Otherwise, if it wasn't important, why introduce all these standards of cleanliness into the society of Malechas? You know, where, you know, being wholesale unclean is like standard. You know, it's like they're, how you say, the, they're,
Hallmark.
Yeah, hallmark, their tradition, you know, their inspiration, you know, stuff like that, you know. Does that make sense? You know, the guy next to you bothers you, so, you know, you pour the mug of, you know, beer over his head. Yeah. He doesn't go, oh, now I got to go change, you know, like this. You know, he just starts a fight or, you know, something else or, you know what I'm saying? You know, he's just, you know, you distract your mind long enough, it dries and you forget about it, right? You know, so.
Everybody goes all home.
Yeah. Does that make sense? So it's a whole different thing. So you're introducing all these elements of cleanliness that aren't there. You know, tidiness maybe, but not, you know, these elements of purity and other aspects to attain purity, right? Because the malecha is not keeping something clean for purity. It's keeping it clean because it looks nice, or you can organize it so you can do something with it. It's efficient. You know where everything is. You know, you go into the garage and everything's there and you can see everything. So you just, it's only efficiency. You know, or, you know, you clean it because then you won't get sick. You know, because if you're sick, really hard to control and enjoy.
Right? Prestige. Mm-hmm. Prestige.
Yeah, prestige is also there. But then it'll also generally, there'll be more elements of aesthetics generally.
Mm.
You know, it'll be in like that. But yes, all these different things, you know. But here is purity for upliftment, so that you're actually qualified to interact with God and those on the pure platform. Does that make sense? So, unless it's important, why would it be introduced?
Yes.
Right? So it's there because Krishna's given it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The Vedic principles push one towards complete surrender unto Him. And whatever such principles are disturbed by the demoniac, the Lord appears. Right? So the principles are pushing that way, because there's, you know, the principle in one manifestation that pushes you to the next, until the ultimate of that surrender to the Lord.
Mm.
Right? Because the idea is all those elements in your surrender to the Lord, then they all just homogeneously are there, wherever they apply. And as we were saying, it's necessary, it's used. You know? So, you know, how you say, the residents of Vrindavan, if they're in Vrindavan, in the village, they'll deal in one way. If they're out in the forest, they'll deal in another way. It's just whatever's manifest. You know, the cowherd boys sit there and behave themselves and, you know, like that, aren't too crazy, when they're sitting in Mother Jashoda's house. But when they go out into the field, right, and they steal each other's lunch, this, that, do all that. You know, they don't do that at Mother Jashoda's table. You behave yourself. You're nice boys. Right, because she knows your mother, right? You know, so you got to behave yourself. Right? Okay, so this is Godhead descends Himself, right? So here is descended as Shastra, as religion. Right, so whenever irreligion is not working, then He's descended as religion, and when it's being obstructed, then He descends Himself to see that that's, you know, going on. 4.8, to deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion. I myself appear, millennium after millennium.
Mm-hmm.
This is Sankarshan. This verse is giving the mood of Sankarshan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these both of these verses. Okay. According to Bhagavad Gita, a sadhu, holy man, is a man in Krishna consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
A person may appear to be irreligious, but if he has the qualifications of Krishna consciousness wholly and fully, he is understood to be a sadhu. Right? So here's, that means that first point is like we're saying here. Kriya Bhagavad is a man in Krishna consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody has any problem with it.
Mm-hmm.
So here, now a person may appear to be irreligious, but he has the qualifications of Krishna consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Holy and full. He is understood to be a sadhu. Now at this point, a doubt can arise.
That's the reason.
Yeah. So that's it. So it's you know, whatever his situation, he's completely Krishna conscious.
Mm-hmm.
So we're meaning you know, whatever the situation, because if he's pious, we'll automatically take it. But even if he's, you know, it appears to be irreligious, he's still on the same platform. Does that make sense? Right? And Duskritam applies to those who do not care for Krishna consciousness. So if they care for Krishna consciousness, but they're not necessarily following everything very nicely, then they're sadhus. They're not duskritinas. So the duskritina, okay, they don't care for Krishna, they're not following, they don't care for Krishna consciousness, then that's obvious, right?
Yes.
But the problem is then you have a duskritina who doesn't care for Krishna consciousness, but he's pious.
Yes.
Oh, we'll say, oh no, but he's a nice person and everything like that. And, you know, he's vegetarian, we're vegetarian, so hey, it's almost the same. You understand? So the difficulty comes is in these in the middle. But of the two, the one that's on the non-Krishna conscious side will consider better than the lower Krishna conscious standard. That's a problem. Right? Because the point is Krishna consciousness is the dividing factor, not piety and impiety. Right? That's the...
Maharaj, when we speak about the qualification of Krishna consciousness, wholly and fully, means is...
Wholly and fully means his consciousness. He's always engaged.
Yes. Means he... I think it is the 26th quality. So he's fully surrendered to Krishna, even if he has some attitude who is not...
Even if you don't see the others, because it says apparently, may appear to be irreligious. Because
yes.
you don't know what the background, you don't know what anything is. So, you know. Does that make sense? You know. We may not see the qualities we're expecting to see.
Yes.
Like that. And so then we'll think that this is not proper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like Babaji's, we can say.
Yeah, you would expect them to be out preaching, but they're not, or, you know, they stay out of the way, you know, expect them to be more in the forefront, or, you know, stuff like that. You know, so I'm saying, you know, that would be a very pleasant example. I'm trying to find one that wouldn't be so pleasant, because that's always more fun. Even though they may be decorated with mundane education, whereas a person who is 100% engaged in Krishna consciousness is accepted as a sadhu, even though such a person may be neither learned nor well-cultured. Right? The person is a rough person. He was off the street. Then he becomes a devotee. It doesn't mean that overnight his culture changes. So he still appears rough and you know, like that. So, but that doesn't make him a duskriti. Right? But you may have another person who's very educated, very cultured, right, that, but that doesn't make him, you know, not a duskritina.
Mm.
Is that sense? Mm. Okay. So right there. Yeah. Start?
Today? We started way back.
Yeah,
4 or something?
Hmm?
40. No, that was. Let's see. 40.
44.
No, that was. Yeah, but today? First class today? We started on 40.
40, yeah, because I kind of remember seeing 40. So we got through 10 pages.
Yeah, wow.
Right? Basically, because there were no overly distracting questions. I mean, a little bit we got with the ghee on the rice. Or
yeah. No serious misgivings.
Yeah. Before prashad. Yeah. He wants to know what to do today.
Yeah.
Should he go by his own gi? Should he stand up on the table there? Problem is the table's only this high, so it doesn't really...
It doesn't do much.
Especially if the servers are standing up, it doesn't create much of an impression. Okay. If everyone was sitting down, it might be an impression, but the servers are standing, so it doesn't really give you that much advantage.
T-shirt.
Yeah, well, you could you know.
Key to the people.
Yeah, key to the people. Yeah.
Key to the people.
Yeah. Okay. Rice, and just put in quotation marks. Rice without ghee is. Yeah, and but then you would run into serious opposition. I mean, you'd have two parties completely opposed like that. You might have the management would have a problem like that, and the health, yes, the health, they would have a problem. So you might run into some, but at the same time is you might find, you know, if you time it right, when all the Sankirtan buses are back in Mayapur, then you'd have 300 to 500 brahmacharis. You might be able to overwhelm the opposition like that. So timing is everything.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki Sarva Vita Bhakta Vrinda ki Jai Nitai Gaura Pena.